You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a solo Saturday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to bring you the best and brightest on the Brooklyn Nets. And that phrase actually has some meaning today, as the Nets coming off a win over the Charlotte Hornets after losing 16 of 18, 12 of 13. This was truly a joyous performance for the Brooklyn Nets. They were clicking right from the beginning of the game, and there were a couple times in the second half where it was close. I think it was a six-point game at one point, even in the fourth quarter. But in my mind, Allen Crabbe essentially ended this one, hitting three straight threes to end the second quarter, and that just really dictated the momentum of this one. And he got them off to a hot start, to had about a 25-footer, then immediately leveraged that into a layup on the next position when he had a guy playing out and him, just got a little cut in for a bucket. And then he had a nasty off-the-dribble three, and at that point, I don't know, I was thinking he must have monstarred Stephen Curry when they were in San Francisco, because I didn't really know that was in his arsenal. He's tried a couple of those shots this year, but I haven't really seen him look that smooth on it. And again, it's amazing what confidence will do for you. I mean, the way we've said it a bunch of times, and even though Crabbe is coming off two poor games before this one, the confidence with which he's attacking the basket and shooting the three ball, completely different than it was earlier in the season. Hitting 38% of his threes, and that's on, over the last 2 months, and this is on a lot of difficult attempts, and obviously this game was in a lot of ways the culmination of that. As far as the rest of the Nets, the guy who really stood out was Caris LeVert. He had another really, really solid game following that career night against the Clippers and kind of a quiet outing against the Warriors. 30 minutes, 8 of 15 from the field, perfect 5 of 5 from the charity stripe, 22 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds for him in just 30 minutes. He was awesome in a game where they really needed him, because D'Angelo Russell, even though he was fine, but he never really got it going, just 2 of 8 from the field. And Spencer Dinwiddie played pretty well in limited minutes, 6 points, 10 assists, but was dealing with foul trouble essentially the entire second half. So they really needed LeVert, especially because Crabbe couldn't hit a 3 in half number 2 to carry them, and he was absolutely amazing. He got 16 of those 22 points after halftime. And I don't know how much more you could say about him. I mean, we've talked a lot about it on this podcast, but his ability to pass the ball on the interior and contort his body at full speed, it's not like there are guards in the league who could do that, but they're usually not as tall as he is. Like, you don't see too many guys who are 6'7". Pulling that kind of stuff off, and I don't know if he's really 6'7", but that's what he's listed at. But anyways, just even guys in that range, you don't really see it happen that often, and it really is because of his unique build, like the fact that he's like that tall, that slender, and that coordinated. Like Spencer Dinwiddie's like another guy who can kind of pull off some of those passes, because it really is a combination of vision, athletic ability, and just the length to like kind of hook around defenders, really allows him to pull those off. And then it was more of what we've seen all year with his quickness to get by guys and to really take advantage of mismatches. And my favorite one, there was a play where Cody Zeller, like, he basically flat out elbowed him, and LeVert just comes down the next possession, gets Zeller on a switch, and you see his eyes kind of light up, goes behind his back rather, between the legs, then just throws a nasty spin move on him, and Zeller's completely turned around, has no idea where he is, and Caris just lays a floater in. And it really epitomized the night for the Nets and the attitude I think they needed to play with to get that win. And obviously, Charlotte was kind of a prime opponent. This was another team that lost a couple games in a row, playing really atrocious defense. And as much as they're due for a good game, the Nets were due to an even greater degree. So it was frankly awesome to see, and just one of those games. And again, they were just so due for it with how many times things have gone wrong over the last 2 months, where everything just kind of came together. Dinwiddie shooting well, Jared Allen,
He was pretty quiet in this game outside of one vicious flush in transition, 13 points, 7 rebounds in 21 minutes. He was efficient. Damari Carroll continued to play exceptionally well, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. He's kind of been the one constant over this whole stretch. And then Joe Harris and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson off the bench, both having nice games. Hollis-Jefferson in particular, 18 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks, 1 steal. And it's what I think on the last podcast I did with Josh, we went into this a little bit, but it's exciting to see him and LeVert off the bench. Like, I frankly love that setup. I think it's really good for this team. I'm going to get a little bit more into his performance. First, a reminder, you are listening to the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local daily sports podcast network. And welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast, your host, Gavin Shaw. Josh got a little delayed getting back from Costa Rica. Obviously, that nor'easter that anyone as the name implies, the Northeast, probably greater New York area, had to contend with, delayed him a little bit. So I'm rolling solo on this one. Hollis-Jefferson, him and LeVert together on the bench is a lot of fun, and it's been talked about quite a bit on this on Nets broadcasts. I know Sarah Kustak made the point of bringing it up, but they really do suddenly have a nice unit off the bench when you have Hollis-Jefferson, LeVert, Harris in there with two of the starters, or Cunningham, and then maybe one of Dinwiddie or Russell or Crabbe, whatever combination of those guys you want to pick. It really does make for a rotation where there's not, and again, this is a relative term because obviously if you play the Warriors, everyone's comparatively a weak link, but at least on a night-to-night basis, there's not really a weak link in that rotation. And it was interesting to hear Hollis-Jefferson say this because I think this was my thinking on it right when they brought him back. He has kind of changed his game a little bit since coming back from injury and gotten back to being that energy guy he was last season, which I know Josh was really good about noticing this. His defense had fallen off a little bit in the first half of the year, and even more than that, just his overall activity level, and that's natural when a guy takes a step forward in their skill set on offense. I mean, usually it's hard to maintain both skill ball and effort ball at the same time and use those in conjunction. And Hollis-Jefferson, I mean, again, this one, he shot the ball really well, 7-13, but taking a little bit of a step back from some of those pull-up jumpers and re-becoming the guy who just relentlessly attacks the basket is really exciting. And I think it's good for him and it's good for the Nets. And it's going to be fascinating next season when you add Jeremy Lin to the mix. Like, obviously, we don't know, the Nets could, I think they could deal him this offseason if they want to. Or I guess they could deal Dinwiddie, though I think I've made it pretty clear I'm staunchly against that. But it is going to be fascinating how that rotation shapes up next year. Because suddenly, just up and down the roster, you have a solid 9 in Carroll, Allen, Dinwiddie, Russell, Crabbe, Hollis-Jefferson, Harris, assuming he gets re-signed, and LeVert. All right, final thoughts on this one. I'm just going to go through the notes I had in the game, see if there's anything interesting. Spencer Dinwiddie, nice little duck in post move on Nick Batum. I don't know. It was a pretty innocuous play, but I just get excited anytime Dinwiddie just shows off how diverse his skill set is and how intelligent he is about setting up defenders on offense and kind of manipulating them right to where he wants them to go. Joe Harris had a nice blow by and dunk. And I think, I don't know how this happened, but I neglected to talk about on the Warriors pod I did with Marcus Barahal about the block he had on Draymond Green. Green, about 5-6 feet ahead of the pack. Harris just chased him down, thought he was going to get posterized. But Green, low-key, not an incredible athlete. Harris, low-key, a pretty solid one, got up and got him. So I thought that was a pretty cool play. Crabbe, we mentioned, 6-for-6 from 3. In the first half. And then, yeah, I love the way the Nets came out in the second half because too many times this year they've kind of built up a lead and they just don't really seem used to playing with it. But for once, they kind of put their foot down on the throats of the Hornets. And I know Charlotte came back and they had their moments and they had, like, little spurts. But All in all, I thought Brooklyn did a good job shutting things down in the second half. Tangentially, I guess, I like how Malik Monk played for the Hornets, a guy who's kind of been thrown under the bus at points this year, to the point that I think if someone on ESPN reported, it could have been Zach Lowe, that he was potentially a trade candidate this deadline, even though he's just a rookie. And I personally think the guy has all the potential in the world to me. Coming out of college, he seemed like he could be a more athletic Lou Williams. And even though he hasn't found a ton of success in the NBA yet, I will hold by that comparison just because I really do like the way he shoots the basketball, his speed going to the rim, his athleticism around the basket. I don't know why, something about those like skinny guards who are just like freaks of nature talent-wise are always kind of fun to watch, because he really does just look like a dude you could walk by in the street and you'd never gauge that he's a professional athlete, much less an NBA player. But he's a stud. I know he hasn't shown it yet this year, but I still have a lot of faith in him turning into a good player. And then the other thing I noticed with Charlotte was, in a way, they're just kind of an older, maybe even slightly more depressing version of the Nets. And obviously, Kemba Walker, even though they were shopping him this deadline, is a better talent than anyone Brooklyn has. But they just are a team with a lot of good guys, kind of like the Nets, and I guess all in all this season, a slightly better version of the Nets. And kind of like the Clippers, but not quite as good as the Clippers are in that category. But they just have a lot of good guys and just not a lot of greatness outside of Walker. Like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, like, nice player, never going to live up to being the number two pick in the draft. Marvin Williams, exact same story. Dwight Howard, statistically great this year. Overall impact, questionable. Clearly Charlotte hasn't won a ton of games. And Nick Batum, not necessarily worth the money. Frank Kaminsky, a guy I love for his college exploits, was terrible in this game. Hasn't really justified the Hornets turning down four first-round picks for him. Cody Zeller, a guy I like, I think like a slightly better version of his brother that the Nets got to enjoy most of the season. Jeremy Lamb, also a nice player, but again, just not a lot of guys with upside, not a lot of guys that stand out. Monk is the one exception, and maybe down the road, him and Walker are a nice backcourt together, assuming Walker sticks there over the next couple of seasons. But I don't know. I guess Nets fans, if you want a reason for optimism, look at a team like Charlotte, and I just think there's even with the Nets' lack of first-round pick this year, there's just even less of a future there. And it could be trading someone like Kemba and then tanking, maybe. But I guess that'd be frustrating if I'm a Hornets fan, because what this group had one playoff run together in, obviously this wasn't the group the whole time, but even going back to the Bobcat days, they've won maybe one, maybe two series since 2004. It's kind of depressing, and it's I guess a bummer if you're a Hornets fan. I'm assuming none of them are listening, and I actually might go on Locked On Hornets this week. So I'm just going to cross my fingers and hope none of them are listening to this. All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Nets Sixers Sunday. All right, welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. Your host, Gavin Shaw. We are going to finish this episode up talking Nets Sixers. All right, Philly, they won seven games in a row after the Super Bowl. Since then, have lost four of seven, including a pivotal seeding matchup against the Miami Heat this past Thursday. They fell 108-99. This final stretch of the season is pretty fascinating for Philly in terms of where they want to angle themselves into their first round matchup. Currently the sixth seed and just a game ahead of the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks, tied at 35 and 31. So two ahead in the loss column, tied in the wins column. I'm curious who they'd want to play out of that top three group, and maybe their goal is to win out and hope the Pacers start struggling and they can overtake them or the Wizards for the fourth or fifth seed. I guess that's the best case scenario if you're a Philly fan, and that's pretty clearly the easiest first round matchup of the group. I feel like they don't want to play Toronto. I'm not quite sure how that season series has gone this year, but Toronto, in my humble opinion, clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference this season. It's not particularly close in terms of scoring margin. They've actually been better than the Warriors this year and just off the Rockets. And I saw a pretty, again, I'm tangent, but I saw a pretty interesting statistic the other day, and it was average margin of lead during the game. So this kind of accounts for games getting close in garbage time and just how much you're up at any point, any specific point during a game. And Toronto actually leads the NBA in that just over the Houston Rockets. And now fresh off beating Houston, I don't know. I think Toronto has solidified themselves as a bit of a juggernaut. And the only real argument for wanting to face them is just their relative lack of success in postseasons of old and how DeRozan and Lowry just seem to fall apart in those times and when teams can really play them for their relative lack of shooting. And obviously they've shifted their style a bit this year and they've gotten a little bit more shooting. So it'll be fascinating, but I don't know. I'm curious, I guess would be the word, to see how Toronto holds up in the playoffs. And then you look at Philly against Boston, and I think that's a great matchup for the Sixers. Al Horford, as superb as he is defensively, I really don't think is the answer for Joel Embiid. And then on the perimeter, Jaylen Brown, a talented defender. I don't know if he's physically big enough to stop Ben Simmons. Boston, though, with Brad Stevens, I think more so than any of these other teams, would figure out a way to really leverage Simmons' lack of shooting in their favor. And I just don't really like that coaching matchup between Stevens and Brett Brown from a Philly perspective. And I think Kyrie's good enough to kind of guide them to a win. And then in Philly-Cleveland, you could make a case that that's the one Philly would least want to see just because LeBron James does not lose in the Eastern Conference, and he certainly never loses in the first round. The Eastern Conference, like that's just a series, like, short of LeBron getting hurt, I just can't, imagine them pulling off. But in some ways, Cleveland's the weakest of those three teams. And, I mean, really in most ways this season, they've clearly been the weakest of those three teams. And you wonder if the switch is there for them. So, and Philly, I watched the majority of the game last time they played, and they looked really, really good against the Cavs, and Simmons obviously not LeBron, but can kind of do some of the same things and cancel him out in some small ways. And again, you really let him focus on just locking in on James defensively in the postseason. Like, LeBron's still going to get 30, 10, and 10, but Simmons, with his athletic ability and strength, can maybe make him work a little bit harder for it. I don't know. I think that's a pretty interesting matchup from a Sixers perspective. So obviously, this is going to be one that they're playing hard in, as they can fall anywhere from the fourth to the eighth seed. As far as how the Nets match up for them, Embiid, just a total nightmare. Obviously, Brooklyn won the last time they played, but I don't know. He's just scary. Jared Allen got bullied last time they played. It was a lot of Embiid facing up from about 10, 12 feet out and just going to town on him. And I don't really know what the Nets can do to counteract that other than maybe bringing quicker doubles. But when Philly has Covington and J.J. Redick out there, the only guy you can really double off of comfortably is Ben Simmons. And you do that, you give him a runway going to the rim, and a lot of times he's going to cut in for dunks. And I guess that's a struggle any team faces against him. But when you don't have someone physically that can hold up against Embiid, and the Nets don't, I think that makes that problem a lot harder. That being said, I really do expect the Nets to come out and play well. I think that Charlotte win, I said the same thing about the Bulls win, but I think that'll give them a much-needed boost of confidence, and I think Allen Crabbe is going to go on a nice little mini-run. I think the way Caris LeVert is playing right now really changes things for the Nets. Between Dinwiddie and Russell, one of them is due to have a really good shooting night. So I think this will be a competitive, fun game, and it'll be interesting if it comes down to it down the stretch, because Philly has consistently been one of the best first quarter teams in the NBA, but one of the worst, if not the worst, fourth quarter team in the league. Certainly, I think the worst amongst playoff contenders. So that'll all be fascinating. Looking forward to watching it tomorrow. Should be back with Josh to recap that one for you. Until then, be well. Again, I'll plug it, but check me out on the Charlotte Hornets. Locked on Hornets pod this Wednesday. I think I'm going to be on talking about the NBA draft. All right, thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.